Joining us now, very pleased to welcome my next guest. Was supposed to speak here today in Orlando at CPAC, where we're broadcasting from, but is still in Washington, D.C. because of Nancy Pelosi's decision to do some last-second reshuffling of the calendar, they say. But Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama's 5th Congressional District joins us on the line. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing well. I'd much rather be in Orlando at CPAC. I was scheduled to speak in about 45 minutes, but unfortunately, it appears that Nancy Pelosi last second unilaterally changed our calendar so that instead of being finished yesterday, we're now going to finish sometime late tonight, 9 or 10 o'clock, which means that all those congressmen who were supposed to be at CPAC speaking cannot go unless they're willing to sign a statement that I was unwilling to sign. And that is that I would be missing these votes because of COVID-19, when in fact I'd be missing the votes in order to be at CPAC. So I really wanted to be at CPAC, but I could not honestly sign that kind of statement that would have allowed another congressman to cast my vote on this $2 trillion spending bill. It's just the vindictive nature of things with Speaker Nancy Pelosi and what we're now fondly, that's in quotation marks, calling Fort Pelosi.
Wow. Well, it does seem like there's a lot of undesirable elements to that bill, but I guess the Democrats seem to be able to just have the votes to do whatever they need to do.
In the House,
yes.
Majority rules, and if you just have a one-vote margin, if you can keep that majority together, then the minority, we're just about like potted plants. We can speak, express our objections, but we're up against a steamroller, and when it's a steamroller versus a potted plant, who wins?
Well, that steamroller's going to win every time. Congressman, you were supposed to speak here this morning. If you had spoken here, talk a little bit about what you were going to say to this audience here in Orlando.
Well, I was going to first reiterate how massive the illegal vote count was in November, focus on voter fraud, and then shift from there to a big question, that is, well, why didn't the courts rule in your favor? And the reason, well, there are multiple reasons, and you saw some of them in Clarence Thomas's dissenting opinion at the Supreme Court level last week. But the big part of all this, and the big problem if you're in a court of law, is, okay, let's say in Nevada you've got 130,000 illegal votes that were cast, and you've got an itemization of them, which is the evidence that was presented to a United States Senate Homeland Security hearing in December. Well, that's not enough to overturn an election result. You've got to prove that those illegal votes change the outcome. And from a legal standpoint, in a court of law, you know, you and I can probably have a pretty good judgment as to who's doing the vote stealing. But once those illegal ballots get mixed in with the lawful ballots during the counting process, there is thereafter zero possibility of segregating them back out so that you can subtract the illegal votes from the vote count in order to discern who really won and who lost. So the judicial system is, quite frankly, they're not capable of resolving these kinds of issues. We had plenty of illegal votes cast and voter fraud. We had it in Georgia, tens of thousands of illegal votes cast. But again, once those illegal votes are mixed in with the lawful votes, there's no way to distinguish one ballot from the other, so there's no way to prove in a court of law that those illegal votes went overwhelmingly for Joe Biden. Hence, Donald Trump, if you count only the lawful votes, in fact, carried Georgia. Or in this case, with 130,000 illegal votes, Nevada.
So the remedy here, and it's going to be, obviously, Republicans in the minority, you're not going to be able to enact any kind of remedy, but fixing this to keep it from happening in the future, do you do it from the federal standpoint? Are we going to have to really hope states turn around and do the right thing?
Well, at the federal government level, we've got momentum to legalize what has heretofore been illegal conduct in our elections. That's House Bill 1 or House Resolution 1. It is the election theft bill that the Democrats are trying to foist on America and down the throats of our state legislatures. under Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution, Congress has supreme authority over any elections involving federal officials. That's congressmen, senators, and presidents, okay? Now, there's been laws passed afterwards to where it included presidents and senators because originally only congressmen were elected by the public. It took 100 years plus before senators were elected. And presidents technically still are not elected by the public. They're elected by electors in the Electoral College process, but that's kind of technical legal stuff. At the state level, we need our state legislatures to pass the kind of legislation that is needed to ensure that you prevent voter fraud in the first instance. And then we need secretaries of state who don't willy-nilly disregard those laws for whatever reasons. And we had that in many parts of the United States of America where secretary of states or other elected officials, judges, were unilaterally changing the election laws passed by Congress and state legislatures in violation of Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution that allocates the setting of times, places, and manners of elections solely to the authority of legislatures and Congress. So we've got a fight on our hands because the other side, they're doing everything they possibly can to legalize the kind of conduct that results in the kind of massive voter fraud that the Commission on Federal Election Reform warned about in 2005. And that was a bipartisan commission headed up by Democrat President Jimmy Carter and Republican White House Chief of Staff James Baker. And they warned about these kind of problems. And what the Democrats basically did in this past election was use that report as a roadmap to make sure that illegal votes were cast in the 2020 election without any remedy for anyone. I mean, the only possible remedy for the presidential level was what we saw on January the 6th, where we had a vote on whether to accept or reject the Electoral College vote submissions from those states that had very serious problems with their election processes.
Now, legislatures all over the country more and more are shifting to the Republican Party. Republicans have made gains, governor seats, and they've really done well at the state level, I'd say, the last 5 or 6 years. So, you know, rather than looking toward the federal government, maybe there is reason to be optimistic, I would think, to get Republican legislatures activated on this issue.
I would sincerely hope so, and in some states you're seeing progress, but for whatever reason in Alabama, we just had a hearing on a bill in the House of Representatives in committee that would take us in the exact opposite direction of where we want to go. The biggest problem with voter fraud seems to be centered on mail-in voting. And there was legislation pushed by Laura Hall of Huntsville, a Democrat, that would increase mail-in voting where you, on the absentee level, they call it no-excuse absentee voting. Well, the reason it's called absentee voting is because for circumstances beyond your control, you're going to be absent on election day and can't make it to the polls. You might have a disability that prevents it. You might be sick that prevents it. You might be out of state that prevents it. But no excuse absentee voting is a misnomer because absentee is not what you are when you ask for a ballot just because you want one and you want it early. And there are lots of problems associated with that kind of system that was pointed out in the Jimmy Carter, James Baker Commission on Federal Election Reform report that was issued in 2005. I'm not going to go into it, into the details if you want me to. I can if you want me to, but that's not the way you want to go if you want to have honest and accurate elections. Hopefully the legislature, Alabama legislature, will beat back that effort when they have their committee vote this coming week.
Joined by Congressman Mo Brooks, Alabama's 5th Congressional District here on the program. Moving on to something else here at CPAC, whenever we have one of these, we do it every year, but particularly in these years after presidential elections when Republicans lose, it's like the soul-searching moment What is the Republican Party going to be like? What is the conservative movement going to be like? What are they talking about? What are the activists talking about? You know, we talked a lot about the 2022 midterm elections and the, you know, probably pretty decent prospects of making some gains back to get control of Congress. But looking at what the party stands for and its ideas and things of that sort that really get people interested, where do you think that whole conservative movement is today?
Well, we are very aggressively playing defense. The socialists are in control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they are putting us on defense on all fronts. We're trying to promote and protect honest and accurate elections. The socialists are trying to subvert them with House Resolution 1, their number one legislative priority, because they know that that will embed them in power for decades to come. We're still trying to promote border security, but then you've got Joe Biden unilaterally and dictatorially opening up our borders, bringing in thousands, tens of thousands, ultimately hundreds of thousands and millions of people who are going to be welfare drains in our country. Then you've also got Joe Biden wanting to give amnesty and citizenship to 10 to 20 million illegal aliens. And I have a wide range there because nobody knows for sure how many there are in America, but Joe Biden wants to give amnesty and citizenship to all of them. And if they get citizenship, well, households with illegal aliens in them are overwhelmingly likely to be on welfare, which in turn means you've got a made-for-Democrat voter. And so that's the political motivation behind what the Democrats are doing. They, quite frankly, don't give a damn about American citizens. They don't care how much damage is done to struggling American families who may lose jobs to illegal aliens or have their wages suppressed by illegal aliens. They see political power, the Socialist Democrats do, and this is a vehicle. Then you've got the big battle between socialism and free enterprise. You've got the battle between moral values and amoral values. Yesterday, by way of example, we just, in the House, I say we loosely, I voted against it, but in the House we passed legislation that would let a man who pretends to be a woman compete in women's sports, taking up women's sports playing time and even getting women's scholarships. That's crazy. I mean, that's science denial. The science is very clear as to what is a man and what is a woman. But this new amoral dynamic that the Socialist Democrats are tossing at us that undermines Title IX, that promoted women's sports, it's just incredible. But that's an example of the onslaught that is coming at us from all directions. Yeah, you've got the Keystone pipeline that was canceled unilaterally by President Joe Biden. That's going to make us more dependent ultimately on Middle Eastern oil, which is a supply line that's hard to protect, that puts us at risk. And we, some of us older folks, we remember the oil embargo of 1973 and 74 that resulted in sky-high energy prices. Why? Because we were so dependent on OPEC. Isn't it much better to have a close ally like Canada be the supplier of our energy needs rather than OPEC nations, many of whom are our political adversaries from one time or another? So, I mean, it's a full-court press on the part of the socialists, and we in the House are playing defense as best we can. But the only real hope for stopping the damage that they want to foist on us is in the United States Senate.
Finally, Congressman, before we have to let you go here, 2022, you are, I guess, very aware of this, but talking about Richard Shelby leaving his Senate seat, not running for an eighth term. Your name is mentioned as a possible candidate for 2022. Where are you on your decision-making process? What do you think about your prospects? Just talk a little bit about that, if you would.
We are carefully evaluating the pros and cons. Quite frankly, and I don't want to seem overconfident, but my reelection probability to the House of Representatives is probably 90-plus percent. I say that in this context. I've had 11 reelection efforts as a county commissioner, a state legislator, and a congressman, and never in a primary or a general election has an opponent of mine ever broken 40%. And basically what that tells me is that the public that I represent is very pleased with the job that I have done. So I've got to weigh that 90% probability of winning re-election, however, serving in a House of Representatives that may still be controlled by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the socialists, which is not a real pleasant environment, versus whatever the percentage probability of winning in the Senate is, but in the Senate, you have much better ability to stop bad things because of their rules and because you're one of 100 versus one of 435. That's just the math of it. So I welcome any insight that the people of Alabama may want to share with me on what they want me to do. That's certainly a big part of our evaluation. And Jeff, you're the one that asks a whole lot of hard questions on occasion. Let me toss one back to you. What would Jeff Poore like Mo Brooks to do? Should I run for re-election to the House or should I run for the Senate? What are your druthers?
I think you're the prohibitive favorite right now for Senate. It's hard to see anybody really challenging you at this point. But I don't know like what could happen between now and November 2022. But I think these opportunities to run for U.S. Senate in Alabama are few and far between historically. And if I or Mo Brooks, I would seriously take a look at doing this for sure.
Well, I'm seriously taking a look, but you didn't really answer my question. Do you want me to run or not run?
I'm just a dumb guy behind a radio mic. But I would like to see anybody run, especially Congressman Mo Brooks.
Well, thank you. That means a lot, Jeff. You have a lot of insight about what's happening around the state, having hosted talk radio in North Alabama, and of course now you're in South Alabama. So I very much appreciate your insight, and that'll be something I'll weigh.
Well, Congressman, don't take my word for it. You actually have more resources at your disposal to figure this out than a little old Jeff Poore here. But I do think you would. You are the favorite as of right now. That's just me talking. But we got to get out of here, get to break. But thanks for making time for us this morning.
Down the Mississippi to the my pleasure. I wish I could have been with you at CPAC in person.
No problem, Congressman Mo Brooks, ladies and gentlemen.